We're getting caught up on the week in Washington. The House impeachment inquiry rolls on. Yesterday, lawmakers heard from a White House official who listened in to President Trump's July 25th phone call with the Ukrainian president. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is planning a vote to formalize the rules of the inquiry. And meanwhile, Senate Republicans were signing on this week to a resolution condemning the early stages of the impeachment process. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on all this. What do you make of the statements and testimony about President Trump's handling of military aid to Ukraine, requests for investigations in that country? What concerns you? What are you watching for? Do you have worries about how the process is playing out? What do you want to come out of all of this? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Scott Wong is a senior staff writer at The Hill. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rob. Good to be back with you.
Well, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, the first current White House official, as I understand it, who listened to the July 25th call to testify in the impeachment inquiry, so a firsthand report there. He raised concerns about that call at the time and in this hearing yesterday. What jumps out to you about this?
I mean, you hit the nail on the head. He is the first person to be deposed by congressional investigators who had firsthand knowledge, who was actually one of these dozens of people who was on the July 25th phone call between President Trump and the Ukrainian President Zelensky. He heard exactly what the president said and raised concerns about this potential quid pro quo where the president and many of his allies were trying to extract political favors, pressure Zelensky to conduct politically motivated investigations into Joe Biden, among other folks. And so, in my opinion, and what we're hearing from many Democrats coming out of that hearing and deposition is that so far that has been the most damaging testimony to date, because this individual, a respected Purple Heart recipient, Army veteran from the Iraq War, is saying that he raised and was sounding the alarm bells and took it up the chain to his up the chain of command and had serious concerns.
One objection that's been raised to previous testimony by the president and some Republicans is that, well, this is hearsay. We're not getting firsthand accounts of things like this phone call. Is this something that stops that line of attack?
I think so. And, the president has referred to this individual, Mr. Vindman, as unpatriotic and a traitor. And you saw some Republican leaders, including Liz Cheney, who runs the messaging operation out of the House Republican Conference, and she said, we need to stop the attacks on this decorated war veteran. That will not stand. He is doing his service and providing a testimony to the best of his knowledge, and we should not be attacking him. And that seemed to quieted the criticism from the Republican side, although they're still complaining about process.
We'll get into the process concerns in just a minute. We have this partial transcript from the White House on that July 25th phone call. Did we hear anything from Lieutenant Colonel Vindman that adds to what we know about what's in that transcript and what's not in it?
Well, what I would say is that, one of the big takeaways is that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman seemed to contradict testimony from Ambassador Gordon Sondland. He's the ambassador to the EU who had come before congressional investigators and told them that he had not really taken part in any of this pressure campaign against the Ukraine to try to extract these politically motivated investigations. Vindman said that Sondland was in fact a big part of that, and that was also something we heard in previous testimony from Bill Taylor. And so a lot of the focus now has been turned on Ambassador Sondland. He was a Trump donor during the 2016 campaign, won a key ambassadorship to the EU, and now there are Democrats, including Congressman Castro, who have said, to me, this sounds like perjury, and we need to call Sondland back to the committee and have him clarify some of these statements. Otherwise, we're going to have to refer Sondland to the DOJ for perjury.
Talking to Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, looking at the big news in national politics, talking about the impeachment inquiry for a good while now. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. You mentioned the procedural side of things, Scott, and a vote expected tomorrow in the House. What is being voted on?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a murky issue. You know, Democrats had been under pressure from Republicans for holding these hearings and depositions behind closed doors, and President Trump and Republicans had raised significant concerns about that. And so this vote is coming, it would seem, in reaction to that. However, Nancy Pelosi is saying that what essentially this is a vote to lay out the ground rules and the framework for what happens next in the public portion of these hearings. And so we've had several weeks now of closed-door hearings, private hearings, where we haven't really seen and heard too much about what's going on behind closed doors. That's going to now start to move out into the public before the television cameras, sort of like the Watergate hearings in the 70s. And so Pelosi is saying that we need rules for how this will be all governed, and so they're laying out some of these policies and procedures for what that's going to look like.
Now, those closed door meetings were three key House committees. The Democrats and the Republicans on those committees could participate, right?
That's right, and we are going to see, you know, one interesting facet of the public hearings based on this resolution is that we are going to see 45 minutes for each hearing, uninterrupted of Democratic questioning, and then 45 minutes of Republican questioning. The chairman could use that 45 minutes, but they could also defer to some of their staff counsel, who obviously are much more professional and experienced in how to depose or question a witness. And then after those 90 minutes, it's going to move to what we normally see on C-SPAN and other cable news outlets, where the lawmakers get an opportunity to question. So that's something that's going to be a little different than what we've seen in past congressional hearings.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ned is with us in Watersmeet, Michigan. Ned, hi.
Hi there. Just wanted to know exactly what crimes could be committed with this conversation. I mean, it was all released. And if we do, just say worst case scenario, what do you expect to get from this?
Ned, thanks a lot for the call. Scott, there aren't articles of impeachment drawn up yet, right? That would be kind of the penultimate step before voting on it after this inquiry. Do I have that right?
That's right. And the resolution sort of addresses that and lays out that it will be the Intelligence Committee and Chairman Schiff who will be leading the public portion, at least, of the impeachment inquiry that will be in the public, focused on the Ukraine matter. And then it talks about, the resolution talks about how recommendations will be sent to the Judiciary Committee and Jerry Nadler, the chairman there, who will then draft the actual articles of impeachment that will head to the House floor and receive a vote. Now, we're hearing a little bit about some possibilities, and obviously they're broad. Obstruction of justice and obstruction of Congress is one, because some of the White House officials and other administration officials have refused to show up for their depositions. And so that is one aspect of this that could be an article of impeachment. Also, abuse of power, the president, allegations that the president used his office to try to compel a foreign government to conduct a politically motivated investigation while withholding publicly funded military or national security aid for the Ukraine. That could be another article of impeachment. There's no telling how many we will see, but those are at least two we're hearing about.
On that issue of why witnesses aren't being allowed to come forward, I want to give a listen to House Intelligence Committee Chair Democrat Adam Schiff talking about Republican resistance to parts of the inquiry earlier this week.
I can understand why the president doesn't want these witnesses to come forward. What I find harder to understand is why the Republican members of this body in this House don't want these witnesses to come forward. Where is their duty to this institution? Where is their duty to the Constitution?
So part of the back and forth over the process and procedure here, do you expect to see more resistance to people coming forward and testifying as we hit the public stage of this now, Scott?
It's hard to say. They've actually, we have a few more witnesses to get through in the private portion of this. They've just called the Intelligence Committee, and the three committees have just called John Bolton to testify just a little less than an hour ago, to testify next week on November 7th. That's going to be if he decides to show up, and he has plenty of reasons to want to talk, because he raised concerns about the Ukraine quid pro quo as well to some of these other players in this saga. And so it'll be interesting to see whether he decides to show up on his own. We are seeing, even though the administration and the White House has made clear to their people they do not want them to show up at these depositions, many are deciding to come anyway, and it's been very interesting to see. And there's no real clear pattern as to who's deciding to show up and who's deciding not to show up, but it's been very interesting when some of these officials talking about their sense of duty and patriotism are deciding to testify and tell the truth to their best ability.
We continue our conversation with Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, looking at some of the week's top political news. Also on the issue of impeachment, Scott, in the Senate, Lindsey Graham, ally of President Trump, introduced a resolution condemning the impeachment inquiry. Here's a listen to him talking about that this week.
The Senate should be letting the House know that if you're going to continue this kind of process and it results in articles of impeachment, we do not consider this, in my view, I consider it to be out of bounds with what we've done in the past, void of basic due process.
Scott, it sounds like that resolution may not go forward. What's the latest?
Yeah, you know, this resolution was rolled out in a press conference with Lindsey Graham and the Majority Leader Mitch McConnell the other day. And since then, Nancy Pelosi, as we know and were discussing earlier, have moved forward with this Thursday vote on their own impeachment resolution that talks about what the process will look like as it heads into the public portion of this investigation. And so it sort of undercuts the complaint from Graham and McConnell that this is all being done in private, when now Nancy Pelosi is laying out exactly what the public hearings will look like in the House of Representatives.
Let's bring on another caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. What stands out to me in this whole process is the mainstream media bias that continues, including Wisconsin Public Radio, saying things like, you know, the impeachment is going forward, and how do you feel when we see these hearings? Nothing has actually happened yet. It's like selling a car and saying, how's it going to feel when you're in the back seat? Well, you know, these are very serious political questions, and my belief, Wisanzo to me, is how the evidence that Rudy Giuliani found of corruption from Biden, that's what led to this whole conversation, which led to the phone call, and that's what led to the president choosing to investigate a corrupt act by a former Democratic vice president. That's what started it all.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call, and that's the case that many Republicans are trying to make here, Scott.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and I think there are even some Democrats that will say, look, the Biden sweetheart deal that he had with the Ukrainian oil company,
Hunter Biden, the son,
does not look good. It doesn't really pass the smell test. The question is, was it illegal? It doesn't appear that, as far as we know so far, and that, believe me, plenty of reporters are digging, it doesn't appear that there was anything illegal to that arrangement. But, Republicans certainly do have a point that, you know, Hunter Biden did not have a whole lot of experience in the energy sector. Clearly, his father was vice president at the time. And Hunter Biden, in a TV interview not too long ago, acknowledged that if his name was not Biden, he probably would not have gotten that deal. That being said, there's still this separate issue with the president while dangling $400 million of taxpayer-funded military aid over Ukraine while demanding investigations into his chief political rival, whether that was appropriate or even unconstitutional. And so, these are the two arguments that we're hearing right now.
Talking to Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in Washington this week. Well, let's step aside for a few from impeachment, Scott, and take you back to your old beat. You used to cover Paul Ryan of Wisconsin when he was House Speaker, and you are covering his announcement launching a nonprofit called the American Idea Foundation. What's that all about?
Yeah, Speaker Ryan just rolled out his own nonprofit called the American Idea Foundation, which will have some offices back in Janesville, and will also, I assume, have offices in Washington, D.C. But it's going to focus on some of the issues that he had been fighting for during his 20 years in Congress, anti-poverty measures, boosting economic opportunity for people, something he calls, promoting evidence-based reforms on things like welfare and criminal justice. And so this is a continuation, I think, of his work in Congress. He's also been keeping busy in many other ways. He joined the board of Fox Corporation, which oversees Fox News. He's been doing guest lecturing at the University of Notre Dame, and has been joining the speaking circuit, getting paid quite handsomely, I would expect, giving speeches all across the country.
And he made some waves after some comments in an interview, I think it was with Tim Alberta, in his book American Carnage, about President Trump. What did we hear there?
Yeah, I don't have the exact quote in front of me here, but he has, as you know and I know, been critical of the president, not only on the 2016 campaign trail where they clashed multiple times over the president's language and some of the president's actions, but also during the time when Ryan was speaker and Trump was in the White House. And so this has been sort of a hot cold relationship. I think they finally figured out how to get along, but Speaker Ryan said in the Alberta book that there were many, many moments where it required him and other sort of adults in the room to steer President Trump in the right direction and help him get to the best decision. And I don't think the president took very kindly to those remarks.
And finally, we'll be watching Senate elections in 2020, and you're looking, and a lot of people are looking, at what happens in Alabama. We had Doug Jones, a Democrat, win a state that's almost always won by Republicans after Roy Moore won the Republican nomination. There's a big name now getting into that race, potentially. Who's out there?
Well, former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who I know very well and used to cover in the Senate, has been calling his former congressional delegation of Alabama in the House of Representatives and sort of putting out feelers, saying things like, what would you think or what would you feel if I were to jump into this very crowded Senate race? This was the Senate seat that he held from 1997 to 2017 before Trump picked him as his first attorney general. It's causing quite a bit of waves in that election and in that race. One of the people who got a call from Sessions is Congressman Bradley Byrne, who essentially has publicly warned Sessions that, look, Trump does not like you. He did not care that you recused yourself in the Russia investigation and created 2 years of headaches for the Trump administration, and will not be very supportive of you if you decide to run, essentially firing a warning shot in trying to urge Sessions not to jump into this race. Bradley Byrne looks like he's the front runner at this point, but there's also some other names, former Auburn coach, football coach Tommy Tuberville among them. And so it's a fascinating race. Oh, also Roy Moore, who lost to Doug Jones after facing sexual assault and sexual harassment allegations in that 2017 special election.
briefly, Scott, Republicans are defending a lot of Senate seats in 2020. This Alabama is one of their biggest hopes to pick one back up from Democrats, right?
I think so. And I think if they do nominate somebody like Bradley Byrne or Tommy Tuberville or even Jeff Sessions, for that matter, they probably will take that seat back. It is a deep red state that President Trump is extremely popular. And so I think out of all of those Senate seats, that probably is the prime pickup opportunity for Republicans.
Scott, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thanks so much, Rob.
We've been talking to Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill. He joined us for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. You can still let us know what you think about the latest developments in the impeachment inquiry. Are you hoping to see more public testimonies now? Do you think the inquiry should proceed at all? Are you hoping the House votes to impeach or not? And then what would you want to see come out of the Senate? And what parts of the process do you want to hear us talk about more? You can tweet us at Central Time WPR, or you can always email ideas@wpr.org.